On your mark. Set.
All right, let's get started. Welcome to the On Track and Field podcast. I'm JT Ayers. All things track and field related, listen, you've heard me say this 100 times before. Equipment, batons, free lap devices, especially free lap devices. Go to ontrackandfield.com. We're going to hook you up. Anything you need, you just need to go to this website, see what they're doing. It's pretty amazing things. Track and field equipment, it needs to be the best of the best to give your athletes the best opportunity. In fact, even if you go to ontrackandfield.com at checkout, just type in Track Talk, TRACKTALK, all one word. You're going to get 15% off. And when you're spending thousands of dollars, 15% off, it goes a pretty long way. So On Track and Field. With me right now is a guy I'm extremely excited to be interviewing and been trying to get down, because on Twitter we go back and forth because we both have kids and we both want what's best for our individual kids, not just our athletes as well, is Jeremy Frisch. And Jeremy, thank you so much for being here, man. First of all, just tell everybody who you are and what you do, and you're in Clinton, Massachusetts, right?
Yes. Yep.
So what's East your Coast. Big thing, man? What do you do?
So I am the owner and director of Achieve Performance Training, which is a tiny little, you know, mom and pop gym in this little tiny town in Massachusetts. And we primarily focus on, you know, like youth, like phys ed and youth athletic development and, you know, long-term athletic development. It's just not athletes. I mean, we have everyone who comes through our facility, but you know, my focus really is on developing kids from the kind of the ground up. So we start them early. They come in and I say train. It's more like play, but they start early with me, you know, through kindergarten and up through the years. We get kids all the way. I have kids that have started with me when they were just, you know, maybe early pre-adolescents who are now in, you know, college athletes. So we kind of run the whole gamut of athletic development.
So Jeremy is too humble. He's got like 24,000 people on Twitter. His videos of him putting things out are changing the way that people, you know, teach adolescents, youth, sports, movement. I even put something on Twitter. He liked it and said, hey, don't forget to teach the kids how to fall too, because they're young. And it blew my mind. He's also written and published work on Stack Magazine, Simply Faster. You need to go check out his stuff. But let's just start right here, because this is why people are listening. Hey, Jeremy, you're an expert and maybe one of the best renowned and has the most credibility to answer this question. In your estimation, what do youth athletes not need to do?
My favorite question here. So the thing they do not need to do, or their coaches make them do, or their parents make them do, they do not need to do conditioning. You know, your classic 300-yard shuttles, you know, going out for miles on end. You do not need to do that stuff, especially young kids, pre-adolescents. If you want their conditioning level to get up, play a game, play tag, run each other down, you know, play hide and seek, kick the can, tug of war, wrestle with your brother, you know, you name it. Those type of activities, when you do them, will develop all the conditioning you need to play, you know, whatever sport. Pick up hoops, 2-on-2 hoops, you know, flag football, any of those things. Those are developed the conditioning you need to play sports and to be healthy. You know what I mean? You don't have to do this extra long, grueling, grinding type of work. And I see it a lot with like youth sports, you know, the coach making the kids do all this extra running at the end of a practice where they already did a bunch of running and playing. It just doesn't make sense. It's just overwork, and you want to make a kid quit and not enjoy themselves in a sport, then make them do all those types of, you know, that long grueling conditioning in the name of toughness, when you really don't need those things to be successful in sport. You need to be skilled and fast and athletic, you know? So that's
so
my
what,
biggest pick.
I mean, my kid's different, Jeremy. I mean, anybody listening to this is going to say exactly this hypothetical of like, but you don't understand, my kid's the cream of the crop. He's different. He needs 2 miles of jogging at 9 years old. Like, so how am I going to get, and I'm going to use the worst word ever, how do I get my kids in shape? Like, you're mentioning these things, but what does that really mean? How do I get my athlete in shape to be able to handle the soccer season, the track season, the whatever I'm trying to have them do?
Sure. I mean, for me, it's always been take the sport, and we break down the sport into small pieces, and then we attack those things. So, you know, I would probably, as far as like maybe a 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old range, you know, we're always going to play small-sided games. You know, my basketball team, last year, they were seventh and eighth grade. We won out. I mean, we won our whole league. We were very talented, and we never conditioned. No suicide runs at the end of practice, no two-minute drills, none of that stuff. All our conditioning was game-based. You know, we played a game called Cutthroat where we just changed the rules of the game where you had to make a pass. Before you could shoot, you had to make four passes. And then you could shoot. But also, the beauty of the game was that if you made a defensive play, you also got points. So if you made a stop on defense, you got 5 points. If you got a rebound, you got 5 points. So these guys were getting after it, playing hard in these games that we made up. And that was all the conditioning they ever need. If I put any other conditioning on top of it, it would have been overload. And the same thing with the younger kids. Like all my, I coach youth football, and I coach all the way up into the youngest ages, up through eighth grade. And our conditioning typically consists of playing tag at the end of practice, where we're chasing each other down, changing direction, trying to get away from a guy, trying to figure out how you can pull some guy's flag that's faster than you. You know, we do those games to get in shape, because at the end of the day, those are way more specific and will help you know, kind of develop the skills that you need to play in a real sport game, you know, in a real like field sport type game.
Yeah. Imagine a world where, I mean, even high school, right? Imagine a world where athletes show up to their particular game or competition, because that's what a practice is part of training them for. They're happy, they're healthy, they're undertrained, not overtrained, and they're excited about the opportunity, as opposed to the exact opposite. I'm fried. I'm beaten to the ground. I can't handle this. So what are you seeing with youth kids as they develop over time? What are some of, like, we're talking about, you know, athletes, what they need not to do, right? So what are you seeing that youth kids are not doing that's, like, hindering them when they're into high school or even trying to be in the collegiate level?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, but, you know, there's just a huge lack of basic movement skills. You know what I mean? I think a lot of kids, what happens is with a lot of kids is they enter sports so early, and it might not be just, it might not specialize in one sport, but oftentimes that's what the case is. They specialize in one sport so early that they've never been exposed to other things, right? And so what happens, like anything, if you practice something enough, you're going to get good at it, right? So you might be really good through those youth years. But then when you start to get into high school, maybe you survive high school and get into college. But somewhere along the line, the physicality of the game is going to change. Even in a non-contact sport, the physicality, you're going to line up next to some dude who you're going to be like, oh my God, this guy is fast and strong and he's going to blow me away. You know what I mean? And so I think there's a lot of athletes that will they'll specialize in one sport and they never get exposed to anything else. They never get exposed to, say you play baseball and you never get exposed to the agility that you could develop as a basketball player. You know what I mean? Or like soccer, like your arm never got to rest because you didn't play soccer in the fall. You're always just throwing a baseball. You know what I mean? Think about the recovery that you can have and the more athleticism you can develop playing soccer in the fall instead of playing fall ball as a baseball player. You know what I mean? So I think a lot of athletes are missing these all around general skills that you developed that we used, like me growing up, we played everything. You had to, because there wasn't these continuous seasons year after year. You had to change sports every season. And so when you do change sports, you get exposed to all these different movements. And over time you develop kind of a very broad all around skill set. You know what I mean? And what's happening now is a lot of athletes are just stuck to one thing and they're very, very specialized and narrow, and they don't have that bandwidth to fall back on when things get tough in a game or they need to look for a different way to move. They don't have that in their kind of toolbox. You know what I mean? And so at some point that's going to hinder them, whether it's losing a game, losing a race, getting injured. There's lots of different things that could come up because they don't have that foundation of basic movement skills.
Well, it's a funny thing too, because it seems like we're having to convince people that two sport athletes in a high school at a high level is a good thing. And look at guys like Mike Trout, Christian McCaffrey, and the list goes on and on and on. We're like, look at all the sports they did. And then we have to convince people of that. But then on the inverse side, people are saying like, no, if I don't specialize them in baseball when they're eight and get them on a travel team early, well, they're not going to have the skill set to be good at 12, 14, 18, and then beyond. I mean, how do you counterpoint some parent that wants the very best for their their son or daughter, and they're like, I'm going to give them a travel team. We're going to give them a private coach. What would you, what advice would you give them?
You know, I run into it a lot in my program. And what happens is it's kind of our conversation earlier. They don't come and see me until things start to fall apart. You know what I mean? So, you know, baseball player hits the ball really great, but then they get to like a certain level of travel ball and now they seem to fall behind. You know, maybe a bunch of kids around them has already hit puberty and growing and that kid hasn't grown yet. You know, maybe they're just not gotten stronger, you know, so they're lacking these certain like kind of foundational physical skills that will allow them to play at a certain level. And unfortunately, what I see is they come to me too late. They're like, oh, this kid's not, they're not up to their level that they should be with their peers. So now we're panicking and I want you to make my athlete better, my kid better, a better athlete. You know what I mean? Whereas, so that's what I always say to the parents, like, listen, get them involved early in these basic movement skills. And it can be anything. Like, it doesn't have to be my Speed Demons program, but gymnastics, parkour, Ninja Warrior. I mean, there's so much more out there now that you can get your kid involved in that really helps develop like basic skills on how to move and get stronger and be flexible and you know what I mean? So like, I always tell parents that that needs to come first and then later on, and you can do those other things. And the other thing is that you can simultaneously, I mean, it's going to cost you some money, but you can simultaneously develop those skills. You can have a kid who plays travel ball all the time and also send them once or twice a week to some type of, you know, training program like I have, you know what I mean? Obviously, and we talked about this before, my biggest issue with starting travel ball so early is I've seen hundreds and hundreds of kids get burnt out in travel ball. So the parents have the best of intentions to get that kids exposed. Cause at the end of the day, when they do play travel ball, they're going to get tons of reps, right? They're going to get exposure to tons of specific reps. So they're going to get better. But at the same time, you know, especially around that like 12, 13, 14 age range, like the brain changes, kids hit puberty, you know, their thoughts change, their needs change, the things they want to do change. And you see kids drop off and not want to play anymore. You know what I mean? So that was one of my things is like always been like, don't jump into travel ball too early because travel ball is a grind. You know, baseball, you're playing double headers every weekend, both days. You know what I mean?
All year round. Yep.
All year round. And baseball, basketball too. Like these kids are, and it's like, it's a grind to play in all those games. And you might get to a point as a kid where like, oh, it's not worth it. I'm not having fun anymore. Whereas if I think if you waited a little while longer with the travel ball to join, then, you know, maybe you're a little bit more mature and you can understand like, okay, this is something I really want. So I'm going to have to suck it up and, you know, dig through and kind of grind through this season. You know what I mean? So I think over time it can become monotonous doing this, you know, travel ball year after year after year.
Yeah. I mean, physical therapists talk about all the time, the overuse injuries at 12 years old. I mean, how is that even possible? And where it's this, well, you're in Massachusetts and I'm in Southern California. So we're literally on two different ends of the entire country. And it's so, I'm not surprised by it, but it's so interesting to me that you and I on either ends and everywhere in between is dealing with the same stuff. It's just like, not to diagnose it, but maybe we will, this instant gratification of like, when my kid's 12, I want him to be the best. It's like, well, you know, maybe we should be doing things to develop them when they're 12 to be good when they're 18 or if not 22. Like, what are we trying to set them up for? It might be better and more advantageous for your baseball player to know tennis and how to do a, you know, back handspring at 12 years old as opposed to, and know baseball as opposed to just being knowing how to throw a curveball when you're 10. Like, maybe that's too early.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I got a funny story. So I coach youth football and my sixth grade team, okay, we won zero games when we were in sixth grade. That season, when we, you know, during the season, I invited all those kids down to my gym. Just like, I'm like, come down. They all came for free. I'm like, come down after school. You know, I'll teach you guys how to like start to lift weights. I'll show you guys how we do speed training, you know, all the gymnastic stuff we do. Right. So we went 0-8 and the next year we won four games. And then the next year we won like six games. We actually ended up winning the Super Bowl, but even better than that, because we weren't really that good even that year. 2 years later, all these sophomore kids who still come to my gym all the time will all see either start or all see significant varsity time this year for the high school football team. You know what I mean? And I could have panicked. The parents could have panicked and took the kids out of my off my team because I was a terrible coach, right? Everyone thought I was terrible. We went 0-8. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, you can't run the spread offense with little kids. You can't throw the football, all this stuff that people told me I couldn't do. And now these kids are just starting to show their true colors and how good they actually can be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so for me, I just kept my mouth shut and we exposed these kids to lots of different things. And we became really close. I became really close with all those kids, and they come down and see me all the time. And so now you're starting to see these years later, how all these basic movement skills and strength training and speed training, how it could all combine, come together to really help these kids later on. You know what I mean?
I think we're going to have to do a separate podcast and talk about what specific things we could do with our, matter if they're 8 or if they're 18, because I'm fine. I'm a track and field coach. I'm very linear, right? I mean, everything we do is very straight. However, if I don't develop any kind of horizontal, vertical, jumping, falling, if I don't teach them how to do that, well, the first pole vault, they're going to get hurt. Or how are we going to ward off injuries? And I don't have to be a physical therapist to do the things you're doing. In fact, just going to Jeremy's Twitter account, just go there and just scroll through the little videos he puts together. I actually have a similar story too, Jeremy. Like, I have a flag football team. We were awful. Yep. Like 3 years ago, we were terrible. It was my son's team. Nicest kids in the world. Terrible talent. And we literally said, okay, well, the one thing we're going to do is we're going to learn how to run fast because it's flag football. And it was just like literally we did, you know, a spread offense with a guy going in motion. It was just run, 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 run. And I don't want to say we outcoached them, but our kids had a blast running fast and running around. And the team, I mean, they were 8 at the time. No one could figure out who was doing and where. It was all misdirection. Kids had a blast. Sure. The next year, they won the whole thing. The next year, they actually were ranked #1 in the nation for flag football. Now, it's funny I say that because we went to UCLA, played in this tournament. We were not #1. We got crushed by kids that have mustaches and stuff. But you know what?
Yeah.
It's fine. We're developing athletes. We're trying to get them in. So the things that you do, they seem unstructured, but I know they're thought out and structured. They're extremely fun. I see the kids jumping, flipping onto mats. They're laughing. You're laughing. It's a lot of gymnastics influence. Give me one or two things we can do with our kids now that you think, okay, immediate mom, pa, coach, or whatever. Here are two things you immediately can do with your kids to help them develop as better athletes for the future.
So, you know, one of the things that people have to, you know, I try to tell coaches and stuff is to get the idea of, like, with kids, get the idea of what adults do out of your head. So a lot of people think, like, adult athletes, like, we need strength. Right. We need strength. We need speed. We need conditioning. We need, those type of things. Typically what you do in training, right, where you do like barbell work or, you know, your proper speed work, things like that. With young kids, get rid of those ideas and think like balance, coordination, agility, you know, spatial awareness, things like that. So those should be your focus as children. And then later on, when those things are in place, your speed work, right? Your flexibility, your mobility, your, like, all those things will be easy to teach, all the barbell lifts, because the kids will have the right foundation to do those things, right? So I always say, like, balance underpins almost everything. Like, static balance and dynamic balance is a huge one, right? So almost this is what I teach every parent, coach. We do it all the time in the gym. It's so simple. You know, you get down on the ground, have all your athletes lay on their back, right? And on your command, you say up, and they're going to roll over to the belly and get up and balance onto one foot as fast as they can. So we call it get up to balance. Up, balance. Every kid gets up as fast as they can. They're going to stand at one foot, right? In like a nanosecond, if you have spent any time around athletes, you'll know the kids who are athletic and the kids who are not athletic. Kids will go flying right away, flying off to the right and left, fall down. So you can tell who's got good kind of coordination, who's got good balance, who's got good muscle tone, things like that, right? And then so from there, you can say get up, and the kids get up and balance on one foot, but now their eyes are shut. All right, I'm going to get up and balance on one foot, hands above your head. Oh, reach down and touch your toe. Eyes shut, hop in a circle the other direction. So you can keep like adding layers to it. For like 15 minutes, you can do that with a group of kids. And you want to know what? By the time they're done with that, they're sweating, they're smiling, they're warmed up, they're ready to go. You know what I mean? So that's like one of my go-tos is to get up to balance on one foot and then just add little pieces to it. And like so one of the things we've always done too, is we add that drill to a speed drill. So get up, balance, one foot. Okay. Hold. Okay. Hop for 10 yards. Okay. Sprint. And then we go from that one footed hop to a sprint. You know what I mean? So you can add all kinds of pieces to that. And look, like you're working on a whole bunch of things. You're working on spatial awareness. You're working on balance, both static and dynamic. Then you're adding a little bit of acceleration piece. You know what I mean? So that one thing right there is probably something I use every week of every year since, you know, for the last 20 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, and it's funny is, you know, I hear you say, hey, listen, coordination, speed, balance, movement, these are skills that are taught. Like anybody can learn them. And there's no excuse. Hey, my kid, you know, he's a little heavier. Or my kid's just a little small. He's scrawny. These are just excuses. We can teach anybody any of these things. I mean, imagine an adult that at any moment can pick up any sport when they're older and just have a good time. They can go to a birthday party and play kickball or go play tennis or pickleball or whatever. Get barefoot. Go outside. I see your kids barefoot all the time. By the way, my entire speed training, anything that we do for the hour, very little of it actually has to do with running and recording times. The rest of it is all movement, barefoot, in the grass. One thing that we want to do with my personal kids is, and I stole this from you, is like, go outside. Go outside and make up a game. Here's a basketball and make it up. Or here's a tennis ball, just make it up. It seems like there's only one or two different like kids that are growing up nowadays. And you and I both have children. Maybe we can speak more into this is either they're going to be 100% overly specialized into a particular sport or they do nothing and they play video games and they sit in their house and it's too hard to go outside. And well, I'll tell you this, I get both those kids in high school and both extremes seem to be the norm. So then I got shin splints and then I have kids that can't balance and I have kids that can't run on one foot. And unfortunately, track and field and sprinting, you're on one foot at a time. That's kind of how it works. Sure. I mean, is there any lasting, we got to talk again, man, but is there any like lasting thoughts about, I mean, everything we're talking about, is this an American issue? I know this is the biggest question probably of the day, but is this an American issue? The things that Americans are specializing in and things that we're doing from Massachusetts to California. I mean, are people in Brazil doing this? Are people in Jamaica? Not to be over general.
I think that if you read some of the stuff from, like a guy named Kelvin Giles, who is he kind of like the OG of kind of what I do. You know, he's been around a track coach. He's been a rugby guy. He's been a strength conditioning coach, and he's done it, written extensively about development and long-term athletic development. And it seems to me, and he's not from the United States. He's from England and Australia. He's saying the same things that's happening there as well. You know, I think that, It probably in this country, mostly because kids have access to, you know, you can get in a soccer club because they have the money to do it. Or baseball or whatever it is. I just think, so with such an affluent, country that you can get stuck into that. And the other part of it is that you have coaches that are, they're professional coaches. You know, if you own a club, you're a professional coach and you're going to obviously, your job kind of hinges on the amount of people come through your door. So you're going to say to the kids, you're going to try to get as many kids to stay with you as long as possible for as long as you can during the year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's a reality too, which is tough because that's who you're fighting against. You know, these coaches are saying, no, come to me. I can give you everything you need when you're telling kids like, oh, you don't need that stuff all the time. You should do other things. This is really, it's difficult.
Yeah, and it seems to be going in the wrong direction too. That's why there's guys like you who are rebel talents that are like, hey, we're going to have these opportunities for people. I swear, I don't know how many times that I've told someone or went on Twitter and said to you, like, I need you to open up something out here. Like, we need you. Gosh, it'd be amazing.
I can tell you, last week I had four different people send me private messages saying, one was Northern California. Another one was in Atlanta. One was in the Midwest in Ohio. And another guy was up in Canada. And I was like, listen, if I was like a business guy, I would know how to like start some type of like franchise. But listen, I got no clue how to do that stuff. I'm just a coach. I like to be on the floor, you know, telling kids what to do or help guide them in what to do. And that's like where my passion lies. And I guess probably that's why I share it so much, because it's not really that hard to do. So if I can just give people ideas, whether it's coaches at other facilities or even parents at home, you know, I try to share that stuff as much as I can, so they get ideas that they can do stuff with their own kids and their own athletes.
Well, there, so, as a parent, you wrote an article that basically says, if you, here's things to remember if you love your child athlete, which probably is the best, you know, backhanded little title of all time. It's like, and of course, parents and coaches love their kids and they want what's best for them. And I like what you're saying. We don't need PhDs in kinesiology or physiological aspects of how the body moves. Just teach them movement, teach them how to move and have fun with it. Have fun. I heard a college coach one time say that, there, at one time there was a fire in that kid, but when I got him, it was only a pilot light and I barely could keep it flickering. And that's not what we want with our kids. And no offense, there's not a lot of, you know, Mike Trouts out there. There's not a lot of Aaron Judges out there. Like, we have to be careful to pinhole our kids to think their performance and the way they're developing has to be like them. So make our kids, athletes.
For sure. For sure. I think too, there's the other side of it now. People are saying like, well, all these guys play multiple sports because they were born great athletes. And like, you know what? That's true. Like they are born great athletes. So they're probably, part of them does, you know, pick things up easier than most other people. But on the other side of the coin, it doesn't matter if you're an elite athlete or not an elite athlete, playing, doing multiple things, lots of different things makes you, you know, will allow you to develop more skills and have a wider base of skills, right? So it doesn't matter if you're a stud or not a stud, doing a variety of different activities when you're a kid will allow you to expand and really have a wide, you know, that large toolbox to choose from. Maybe other people's toolboxes are a little bit bigger than yours or whatever, but it's still for you individually, you know, you're able to call upon those movements when you need them or when you want to use them. You know what I mean? And that goes throughout life, not just playing sports. Can you go out and, you know, be able to ride a bike when you're older, or like you said, play like I don't know what it is, but pickleball is everywhere now.
It's an epidemic,
right? So you see those people being able to do that thing, and maybe, you know, you figure that generation that's playing right now, the primarily pickleball, they probably grew up moving around a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, and like what you're basically essentially saying is, we don't know these kids' ceilings. We don't know their potential. There's a whole lot. Genetics has something to do with it. Learning particular skills has something to do with it. But why innate, like, hinder those ceilings on these kids when they're young? Let's get them ready. Here's a great example. We'll end with this. I just became pretty good friends with Bobby Stroop, who's Patrick Mahomes, including Travis Kelce, Jalen Hurts, a bunch of other really great good guy. Fantasy football player. Great guy. What does he do? His entire job is teaching movement. He teaches, and that's what he does, and that's his skill set, and that's what he does with the best athletes in the world. And Patrick Mahomes in high school was the best Texas high school athlete for like three different sports. So, and they're now teaching him movement with his hands, his shoulders, his fingers, everything. So if they're doing it, there's no reason why you and I shouldn't be doing it with our very nice, unathletic kids.
I'll tell you, my son, he's 14. You know, he was like, maybe next time we talk, he was just like a sort of average and maybe slightly pudgy, overweight kind of kid growing up. And he was like, you know, decent at stuff. You know, he could figure, but he's the one that did everything. Like everything I ever came up with, he's the first one I tried on. You know what I mean? And to talk about like puberty hit, and he went from like, you know, he grew 7 inches. Whoa. and dropped like that little pudge that he had is just vanished. You know what I mean? And so it's amazing what puberty can do, and then take on those skills that you sort of developed that looked fairly average when you were a kid. And now you put it on a kid who's gotten taller and faster just because he's hit puberty. You know what I mean? It's like, now you're starting to, now we're starting to see like kind of the fruits of his labor and how is his athleticism is really starting to sprout.
Yeah. Smile on his face the entire time. And now sports is something to be enjoyed rather than
100%
an indicator of, you know, my self-worth, which is just ridiculous. Sure. Right. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining me, man. I know you and I, we got to do this again. You are literally game recognizes game. And I'm also telling you what you're doing is unbelievable. And I just wanted to thank you because as a dad and not just as a coach, you're helping me. The stuff you put out there is really worthwhile. So, you know, I think Twitter is a good place to find you. Any other place we can go and try to gather resources about you?
Twitter and, you know, Instagram. Anything I usually post on Twitter, I put on Instagram too. I just love Twitter because it's like Facebook is like all the local people you know and families.
Yeah.
And like Instagram is like, you know, you just put stuff on. You don't really know who you're talking to. But Twitter is like just like guys like you and like all these great coaches are on there. It's just like a, you know, just this awesome spot to like share ideas and debate and talk about all things training, you know? So I love, that's why you'll find me on Twitter the most.
Awesome, man. All right. Well, this podcast is brought to you by On Track and Field. Go to ontrackandfield.com. Ironically, they have a lot of cones and things that you need, just like what Jeremy was talking about. And, you know, Track Talk, put that in the promo code, get 15% off, reach out to them on Twitter, go to their website. You can even reach out to me if you need any extra help. Jeremy, you're a living legend, bro. And I'm really excited. Thanks, that man. We got to talk and we got to do this again. Thanks, man.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Love being on.